You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the 13th episode of Season 2 of Warriors Off-Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by two-time MVP Stephen Curry. One of his more absurd stats this season? He's hit 13 of 26 shots from 30 to 34 feet from the basket. I caught up with Steph after practice Wednesday about his revolutionary shooting range and his relationship with Kevin Durant, both on and off the court. And later, sports columnist Scott Osler. Stick with us, and we'll be right back after the break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Stephen Curry might not win another MVP this season, but he's been playing at an MVP level. We caught up Wednesday afternoon after practice.
When did you really start practicing 30-footers?
Honestly, I never really... It's never like an intentional practice. Like, I gotta go out here and practice shooting deep threes. It's just a natural progression of the amount of time I spent in the gym when I got into the league and all that type of stuff. It, you kind of just stumble upon it.
Yeah.
I add it to like one of my drills that I do, so it's not an everyday thing. It's just you understand what it feels like to keep your rhythm from that far out, and then in the game it just kind of comes out naturally. But most of it was when I got better shooting off the dribble, just in general,
yeah,
transition and stuff like that, where the mechanics stay the same. It's just a matter of feel wherever you want to take off and shoot from. But the mechanics, like shooting off the dribble, having to control the ball, control your balance, momentum, and all that type of stuff. That was like my third year in the league.
Okay.
After the lockout, when I knew that that could be a weapon.
You hit some deep threes in college and stuff, right? I mean, but it wasn't necessarily something you practiced actively until you've been in the league.
I had a little bit of range, but my junior in college is when I played predominantly point guard, so I got a lot more shots off the dribble. But it was never like... Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't remember like really stretching outside the three-point line. NBA three, and like where I'm shooting now. NBA three was kind of like the visual of it for a college guy. It's like, whoa, he's already ready for league games and all that type of stuff. We played on some NBA arenas in college, and like I see the NBA line, and you'd be like, oh, that's not that far. And all that type of stuff. But there's other, like the deeper range is kind of just a natural progression of me trying this stuff.
What would you think of a four-point line? There's obviously been conversations about that.
I hate it.
You hate it? Why?
Just because it would change so much. I mean, obviously it would benefit me. I shoot probably enough from that line. But it seems like it would just change too much of like spacing and all that type of stuff in the game. Honestly, not that many people would shoot it consistently, so it kind of just, I think it would, maybe I'm hurting myself to say
yeah.
Me and a couple other people might have the leg up in terms of using that as a threat. I think it just drunk up the game a little bit.
Right. You're obviously a guy whose game subsists on rhythm. Can you kind of feel when you can hit that 30-footer? Is it like... you know what I mean? Like, can you feel that zone coming up?
Yeah, I probably don't. That's probably not my first shot of the game.
Yeah.
So it's usually coming after you make a couple or Yeah, rhythm, you get a rebound, your rhythm dribbles up the court, you kind of see how everything's developing, you know, that's going to be some space to shoot it. For a lot of it's just confidence.
Yeah.
No matter where I take it, any shot I take, unless it's like off balance, 1 second on the shot clock or something like that, I always feel like I will make it.
Right.
It's a surprise when I think.
Yeah. It seems like you and KD are in as good of a rhythm with each other as you've been. How do you feel like your relationship with KD has developed, not just on the court but off the court, the past couple of years? Like, how have you gotten to know each other and away from the court?
On the court, it's been great. That first year was kind of a lot thrown at us in terms of trying to balance, you know, what we could bring to the table. We knew we would complement each other really well. The fact that the ball would move and everybody would get touches and stuff like that. After the first half of the year, we picked up a lot of momentum and understood how we could both be like a 10 out of 10 of ourselves. And not take away from what anybody else is doing, but also bring the best out of each other. And that's only gotten better in terms of the chemistry, understanding the flow of games and how to get each other going. Whether we're on the court at the same time or not, which has kind of changed from time to time. Off the court, it's like one of those situations with me and the rest of the guys in terms of we don't spend as much time together off the court as people might think.
Right.
Just for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, family and stuff, right?
But in terms of like, I'm plugged in, but we all know what's going on with each other, supporting each other, like stuff that he's doing off the court. I always make sure he knows that stuff doesn't just fly under the radar, you know, with our team. Like him as a human being and kind of supporting that part of who he is important to all of us, and we all kind of bring that vibe to the table. So for me and him, when we do hang out, whether it's on the road or whatever, it's pretty low-key and chill. But it's not an everyday thing.
Like when he has a new shoe dropping or something, you might like congratulate him, or you kind of keep tabs on that kind of stuff.
Shows he's producing, and the same thing goes for what I got going on. Even in the locker room, like we're all in each other's business. So.
You guys obviously have different backgrounds, but you can probably relate to each other in a way that not a lot of people can, given that you're, you know, at a level that not a lot of people are, and you're dealing with a lot of attention that a lot of people aren't dealing with. Do you feel like you can kind of relate to them in a unique way?
There's just a mutual respect, for sure, and understanding how hard it is to get to this level and sustain it. To deal with, all the attention and everybody kind of dissecting everything that you do. And then understand the responsibility that me and him have in terms of night to night, we got to be at our best. That's probably been the biggest thing this year in terms of conversations that we had on the court. How do we get to that level every night as fast as possible?
Right.
Understand that we have the ability to do it.
How long have you known him? Do you remember when you first met him? Was it college?
It was back in early high school days.
Really?
AAU. And then...
Do you remember which tournament?
It was a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Top 100 camp that the Players Association puts on. And it was at VCU, I think. My high school coach coached his team at camp. Talked to him a couple times there, got to know him. And then Team USA in 2010 when he got to the league. It was the first time I actually played it together or against each other.
Right.
Together and against each other, really. But in college, our freshman year, his only year, I was always measuring myself, like trying to catch him in the points per game race. When he was one, I was two. It was always fun to just keep tabs on him.
Is that part of why you were confident that this would work, that you guys playing together would work, just because you knew a little bit about who he was and how selfless he is, not just as a player, but as a person?
Yeah, just knowing the kind of character he has from being around him, especially the World Championships in 2010, 2014. understanding that his game would fit just because there was a role that we didn't have at the time. But it also that he was in search of playing, like, he always talks about playing good basketball, beautiful basketball, and everybody getting involved, and just having a high IQ, and understanding that he wants to be great, cares about how he plays. But that doesn't mean scoring 40 every night. That means just being dominant. That will transition really well.
He's obviously had to deal with a lot of speculation this season, everything, all the hype around everything with Draymond. As a friend, how have you kind of just tried to, like, be there for him when he's constantly being talked about and written about and that kind of stuff?
There's nothing really you need to say. It's how you start the journey off, which is important. Man. It wasn't just talk that there was team this, team that, like, we're all in together. Like, that's how we developed this whole thing. And so, yeah, there's going to be drama and ups and downs, but if you don't have a solid foundation to begin with, then there's nothing you can do to really repair that or support somebody who won't do that. So we understand he has a lot of, we only call it the haters or whatever you want to call
it. Yeah, you can call it that.
The nonsense, noise around everything he does. We have it as a team, but in terms of internal situations, relationships, and all that type of stuff, you know what each other's about at our core and our foundation. It helps us get through that type of stuff.
What's kind of one of your just favorite memories of him that maybe we didn't see on the court, just like you guys hanging out, or, you know, maybe something that we haven't seen in a game? Could be just like hanging out or whatever. Or is there like something you guys like to do together or just talk about or inside joke or?
Nothing I wanted to.
No, it doesn't need to, yeah.
I think it was mostly like, I don't know. The funniest thing we probably did was like the whole Nike Under Armour thing.
Yeah.
Like, we used to hate on each other's shoes for probably a month straight. Anytime we had some new colors come in, something new was
shit. You just give them shit?
Hell yeah. Vice versa.
Yeah.
But now we laugh. Like, he's on his 11th shoe. I'm on my 6th.
Yeah.
And like, anytime we ask the equipment, or he, our equipment manager, he'll go over and ask him, hey, you guys, can I get the new KDs? And I just look at him like, yo, you just called your own shoe. Like, is that technically talking to a third person?
It's weird, right?
It's weird.
Like, you don't do that, do you?
No, I do.
And you do?
And the next time I asked Eve for some Curry 6s, he called me out on the same type of vibe.
A little hypocritical.
That's probably talking about, like, some people don't necessarily know
right.
what it feels like in terms of our experiences.
Right.
That's trivial, but it's hilarious.
Yeah. Does he give you a hard time for not signing with Nike? Obviously, you had. I mean, you guys are past that at this point.
Yeah, it never was that. It was, we all make decisions that we feel like is right for ourselves. So he, of all people, would know that.
Yeah.
After chatting with Steph, I broke down our conversation with the Chronicle's award-winning sports columnist Scott Osler and looked at how long the Warriors can keep up this winning streak.
You know, I just got the chance to talk to Steph, and the thing that is incredible, and Steph and I talked a little bit about this, is he's shooting. Well, guess what he's shooting from 30 feet this season.
Well, you told me already, so I'm going to guess about 50%.
Which is 50%. Bizarre. He's 13 for 26, which, when you really think about it, is incredible, because a 30-foot jumper is basically a shot that people will heave at the end of a shot clock. It's kind of a desperation thing usually, but it's become a staple of his offensive game. And, you know, he was telling me that it wasn't something that he set out to do. His range just is so good that over the course of time, he gradually took another step back, to the point where he was practicing that 30-footer. And it's insane. Do you think that it has do you think it might be the biggest asset, offensive asset the Warriors have? Because you literally can't defend it, and it spaces the entire floor.
Well, you said it. Exactly. I totally agree with it. There's nothing like it. There's nothing. It's made – well, Kurt designed his offense around Steph when he came here. He thought, I've got Steph. How can I maximize him? And he figured out a way to get him set in a series of picks and all that stuff. But it's based around Steph's crazy range, which at the time was crazy. Now it's just completely insane. But their whole offense is spacing and moving. And now they've just got all this. It's like if you have a small house and all of a sudden you move into a giant house. And like, wow, we got lots of room here. So he's just made everything easier for everybody, including, you see it with Cousins now, able to shoot three-pointers. But with Steph out there, it ruins everything and every defense they face.
Yeah, and you mentioned Cousins. What have you thought of his transition so far? He had 22 the other night. He had 12 points in a four-minute span in the fourth quarter with Steph and KD sitting out. Has he exceeded your expectations early, or is he where you thought he'd be?
I knew his attitude was going to be good. I know we all know the questions about his attitude in the past, and my suspicion was that it was going to be good. His attitude was going to be good because it had to be. Because he's on trial and his future is at stake and all that stuff, so he's got to be on his best behavior. So I knew that. But one thing that's impressed me is two things. One thing, how quickly he's fit into the flow. It doesn't seem like when he comes in there, oh my God, it's all clunky now. It just doesn't work.
Right.
And also the sort of effort and enthusiasm he puts in. How many times have you seen him dive on the floor? How many times you see a 275-pound guy do swan dives on the floor to save a loose ball? And he's done that a few times. And I think that just goes a long way with that team. They just see the effort he puts in.
I think the thing that surprised me is his defense has been better than I expected. He's obviously been derided for having minimal defensive effort throughout his career. But the thing is, and it's kind of, I kind of call it the KD effect, because KD has all the potential to be an elite defender, but he hasn't necessarily been an elite defender just because he has so much burden offensively. And I think what you're seeing is since he has less pressure to be the guy over and over offensively, he's able to focus a little bit more on the defensive end. And he's got good feet. He's got, the lateral quickness is better than you might have thought, given the fact that he's coming back from Achilles. And he's a big body, which is something the Warriors were lacking.
Yeah, and also this is an infectious team in a lot of ways. If you come and play here, you have to get into the joy and the spirit and the running and the fun and all that stuff. And you also have to get into the defensive thing because they're big on defense. So you can't come here and say, yeah, I've never really played much defense, so that's not my game and I'm not going to play. You gotta buy into the defensive thing. And I think he has, and I think he's probably gotten some – I haven't talked to Ron about it, but I'm guessing he's probably gotten some pretty good instruction too. I bet he's learned things on defense here in a short time that he either didn't pay attention to or had never learned before. So I agree. He's been – kind of a surprise on defense.
How fun is that Embiid Cousins matchup going to be tomorrow?
That's going to be fabulous. Because you have not only the fact they're big trash talkers, I'm not sure how Embiid is in this, but Cousins, he plays kind of angry. He's not out there jovial and having fun and stuff like that. He's got that edge on. So along with the trash talk, that's going to be very interesting. And two great players. So that's phenomenal.
Two of the most skilled big men in the world. Yeah. Embiid might be the most impressive big man in the league. Just I feel like he can do everything, and I know that's saying a lot because there's this guy named Anthony Davis who's pretty darn good. But the thing that I'm excited to watch tomorrow is to see how he does defensively, because one thing I wrote when the Warriors signed DeMarcus was he's going to be an asset defensively because he's a better matchup for a Joel Embiid for an Al Horford. I thought he actually did a pretty good job on Al Horford the other night, and that he actually did decent even on an island at times in pick and roll situations with Kyrie.
Yeah.
Because they don't have another 6'11", 7-foot guy who can just, match that size and that athleticism. Yeah. And obviously with Damian Jones out, that's been a huge void for them.
Yeah. Plus Cousins, it seems to me, is he's still kind of the new kid in school, and he's still trying to prove himself. And I think he sees games like this and a matchup with Embiid as a chance to show his teammates that, hey, I'm one of you guys, and I can play with you guys, and I can help you out. And I think he factors that in. I think he'll be extra jacked up because of that.
The Warriors are now riding an 11-game winning streak, and as cliche as it is, they really do look unstoppable right now. I mean, their offensive rating during this 11-game winning streak has been unbelievable. I think it's like 125 or something like that, which is video game type efficiency.
Yeah.
We obviously don't have a schedule in front of us, but how realistic is it for them to challenge that 24-game winning streak
a
couple years ago?
Seems pretty outlandish because, as you know, covering every game, they're just games. Even every great team has games every 2 weeks, every month, where they just come out and they got nothing. You know,
right.
It's just they've had a bad trip, they're not feeling it, whatever, and they just have nothing, and they get beat by a Phoenix or somebody like that. It just happens, and for them to stave that off for another X amount of games, it's a lot harder than, to me. It's a lot harder than a lot of people are making it sound. They're making it sound like, oh, you know, you got Phoenix, you got a lot of easy games, and plus they're playing well. It's just not that easy. If they pull it off, it would be.
I do think that integrating Cousins helps in that department.
No question.
Kerr said today that this doesn't feel like the late January, early February doldrums that they're used to feeling. You remember this time last year, I was writing every day about the complacency and they were just trying to get to the All-Star break. And honestly, it was so boring. Yeah. And this season, it just feels like there's so much energy, there's excitement, there's enthusiasm. And a lot of it has to do with DeMarcus. Yeah. Because even though he's played 5 games now, they still need to get him up to 30 minutes. They still need to, kind of ease him into the rotation. There's still a lot of things they want to see and learn about that dynamic.
Yeah.
And I think that is going to help prevent that quote-unquote letdown game about.
Okay. If I was a fan, I'd actually be worried now, and I'd be kind of sad. And the reason is I'd be thinking, this is great, but next year we're not going to have Boogie.
Yeah,
I think people would already start missing him because he's actually, you know, it's been pretty quick.
Yeah.
And I think he has surprised people, and I think people have adopted him as, I can't speak for the players, but I just talked to a lot of fans and everything. I think fans have adopted Boogie Cousins as one of their guys. And it's probably reciprocal. I bet he feels that.
It's going to be really interesting. I mean, I'm looking way far ahead now, which I hate to do, but it does feel like a really good fit in a lot of ways. And I've talked to DeMarcus's mom, I've talked to his brother, and everyone close to him has told me that he's as happy as he's ever been.
Yeah.
I think he really appreciates being one of the guys rather than the guy. Yeah. I think he felt a lot of pressure in Sacramento and even New Orleans, even though he was, along with Anthony Davis, because literally it was just those two and everyone else, even though Drew Holiday is a pretty good player too. And I think he just is enjoying that egalitarian ethos that the Warriors have, and it makes you wonder what are the realistic chances that he could come back next season, because don't mess with happy, right? And I know that the Warriors have said this is a one-year rental. Do you think that there's a better chance of him coming back than some people might think right now?
Yeah, it's probably about a 3 or 4% chance now. it's not preposterous. I don't know how much they can only give him, $5-6 million.
So he's on a 1 year $5.3 million dollar deal right now. They can only give him a 20% raise. So I think that gets him up to like 6.3, 6.4 or something.
And what do you think his value on the market would be? 20 million, 25?
He could, yeah. I mean, he could get probably, because he's looking, he doesn't look like the all-star DeMarcus yet, but it's realistic to believe that he'll get close to that. I think he'll be able to triple his salary. Yeah, I think he could make in the $20 million range.
Well, that's a lot of dough to leave on the table.
It's a lot of dough, and then you think about it, and the unfortunate thing for the Warriors is they don't get his bird rights for another 2 years.
Mm.
So, you give him a 20% raise, and then if he comes back, I think you have his early bird rights, and I believe you can give him like a 75% raise, which still isn't even in the ballpark of what he could get elsewhere. And then after that, he could get a max deal.
Right.
So he would need to take a pay cut for 2 more years to get the money that he deserves to get.
Well,
then by that point, he's 30 years old.
Right.
and
probably won't get a max deal.
In who right. you know who knows? He's right. got a guy Big coming guy off like an Achilles, right. 6'11", 270 right. pounds. You know, this might be his only opportunity to make money. So it just doesn't make any sense. But you got to wonder, like, is you got to think that if there was any possible conceivable loophole, that the Warriors would find it and he would come back because he is happy right now.
We live in a fantasy world in sports, and that's kind of a fantasy. But you see it with Tom Brady. I don't know what the figures are with Brady, but Brady leaves a lot of dough on the table that he could. He takes a lot lower salary so that the team can spend it on other things. David West took a huge hit. David West is like the all-time guy for taking a leaving money on the
but
table.
David West was in his mid-30s, right. was chasing a ring. Cousins probably will win a ring this
right.
year.
Yeah,
and he's in his prime. And I you got to think that he's going to take the money. But I do think that if and when that happens, it's gonna be hard. He's not going to want to leave.
It will be. But, you know, there's so much team building by players now. You know, LeBron going and building his team there and stuff. There's so much of that going on now that there's a big opportunity for a guy like Cousins to hook on with a couple guys that he knows are superstars and could win somewhere else. So that kind of works against the Warriors in terms of keeping things together. But it is maybe we're too fanboy here in the city because we see these guys and everything. When you look at this team, you got to spend like 8 months of the year with these guys.
Right.
It's a pretty special group, you know?
Like,
is there anybody in the world that doesn't like Klay Thompson? Is there anyone in the world that thinks that Steph Curry's a jerk? Is Andre Iguodala a bad guy to hang around with? Sean Livingston? You get these guys, it's just... It would be a huge lure, and I could see it. It's a fantasy, but I could see Cousins doing it.
Okay. Well, you heard it here first. Breaking some news on the podcast. Scott Osler, the much revered Scott Osler, thinks that DeMarcus Cousins is going to be a Warrior long term. right after you said that there's a 3% chance that he would come back. So
during this podcast, I've actually bumped it up to 37%. So how's that?
Okay. Well, you know, there you go. Scott, I appreciate you joining me. I want to thank Steph also for sitting down with me earlier. We're gonna keep this locked and loaded. We're trying to do this every week. We'll continue to have players and coaches on a regular basis.
I want to thank Steph and Scott for joining me on this week's podcast. Always great catching up with those two. Warriors Off Court is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe to it wherever you get your podcast. And if you've got a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter at @con_cron and email me at claterno@sfchronicle.com. Support Warriors Off Court and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.